There's a movement happening. Some call it Reformation. Others call it Holy Discontent. We call it the Resistance. Traditions and harmful teachings have kept the bride captive for centuries. We will explore these systems and contrast them with God's design. Join us as we discuss God's patterns for life, ministry, and most importantly, His church. We will do this with scripture, testimony, music, and satire. We are resisting the system and embracing the design. We are the Resistance.
Hey, welcome back to the Resistance Radio Show. I still have apple in my mouth.
You look like a squirrel over there packing it up for winter.
He's got a knife in his hand, too.
Just so everybody knows, the views that are expressed in our show are all our own views and do not necessarily represent those of the station or its owners or producers or sponsors.
Keep talking, I'm still chewing.
Yeah, Captain Dave is at home right now saying, "Oh, I'm really glad he did that disclaimer."
We don't want to get anybody in trouble.
Or Dave. They're not Dave's views either.
Nope.
Right.
They could be. They're not necessarily.
Not necessarily. Okay, so I want to go back to what you were – the people you were just talking about in the Old Testament. There's
right,
a
so
point
– is living a meager lifestyle even biblical? We talked about a bunch of rich people in Scripture.
Correct. And we're going to specifically talk about Abraham and about Joseph and about David. And I know that a lot of, especially prosperity gospel people, they point to that and say, "Oh, look, God's people were wealthy." Well, listen, what I see is Abraham and Joseph. Well, first of all, Joseph was a true steward because he was taking care of other people's stuff.
Right, right.
What he had was entrusted to him. It wasn't his. Mm-hmm. So for Abraham's sake, Abraham was using everything he had. He was building the basis of the patriarchs,
yeah,
Isaac, Jacob, and then
well,
what
and
came out
his
of that?
Story starts with, "Hey, leave your father's household and your country,
correct,
and come to this right. land that you don't even know where it is.
Give right. up everything and blindly go into the desert, and God will show you." So when he did that, he was entrusted with a lot of wealth, which basically safeguarded. I mean, look at what he went through. If his household had not been large, then he would not have rescued Lot. He wouldn't have defeated the kings.
Right.
He wouldn't have been a terror just by his presence. But Abraham was not greedy. When it came time to separate from Lot, Abraham said, "If you go left, I go right. If I go you go right, I'll go left." He didn't care because he trusted that God would provide. But that thing was exactly what God was doing in Abraham's time. So Abraham was using his wealth to do the thing that God was doing. Now look at Joseph.
Yeah, he wasn't hoarding it for himself.
He was using it to build the foundation of this huge people that God was setting apart.
Right. And the New Testament says that, you know, seek first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and all these things will be added unto you. And I think Abraham's a great example of that. Abraham had a heart for God and for what God was doing, and he believed that a great nation was going to come out of his loins.
He was obedient.
And that's what he followed first. He left his family. He left his home. He said, "You go left, I'll go right." He did what he was supposed to do. Even if he was greedy, when he defeated the kings and they came to give him payment, he wouldn't have said, "I'm not going to take it because I don't want you to ever be able to say you've even unlatched my sandal."
He would have said, bring it on, give me.
But he didn't. He had this high regard for the righteousness of God. So you go to Joseph, and what was happening with Joseph was God was preparing a place for the 70 or 72, depending on where you want to pull your number from, people that came out of Canaan to be safe and secure and to grow into the nation of Israel. And that whole thing orchestrated by God is what Joseph even acknowledges. You meant it for good and God – or for evil, and God used it for good. He saw what was happening and he served his master well. That's what he did. I think you see a picture of what Joseph did with Pharaoh and say, "Do we serve our master well?" Because Joseph didn't say, "Oh, I'm second most important person now. I want to be first. Kill Pharaoh and put me in charge."
Yeah.
He took care of everything to the best of his ability to please his master. And in that, God used it to give Israel a place to become a great nation.
I'm pretty sure, and I mean, I read the story of Joseph yesterday, but knowing what I know of having read the story, I'm pretty sure Joseph is someone that had a pretty real understanding of grace. It's like, yep, your brothers all tried to kill you. You ended up in prison for something you didn't do. You get out of prison, you end up being, you know, basically in charge of everything.
Well, and the two guys that were there that he gave the dream and, you know, the cupbearer and the baker, and neither one of them remembered him like they promised they would,
right.
You know, and then
he had all authority to actually, like, take vengeance out on them, and he mm-hmm. didn't.
Yeah, he still didn't.
And his family, too, and he didn't do that either.
Right.
And Potiphar's wife. you know, who falsely accused him. And then he comes out and he's in charge of everything, and you don't see him being vindictive against her.
Right. Yeah. No, you see him doing the right thing no matter how much money is on the line.
Right. So what he was doing was, he was doing the thing that God was doing at that time. He was joined in it. He used all of his power, all of his resources to do that. So then move on to David. And, you know, one of the things that I've always admired about David is, you know, whenever his, you know, everybody's trying to take the throne from him, and he's just like, hey, it's God's throne. If he wants me on it, he can put me on it. If he doesn't want me on it.
Right. And when he has those, you know, like kings in, like Saul, whenever he sneaks up on him in the cave, and he could have killed him, but instead he like won't stole something from him. Right. And then said, look how I've been good to you. And Saul's all broken by that and everything. So
David's in tune with what God's doing at that time. And what God's doing at that time is replacing an evil king with a humble king, with a king after God's own heart. And what was he – when David started getting all this wealth, it's not like Solomon just came on the scene in a poor nation and all of a sudden he was the one. He compounded off of what David had already started. Yeah. So David was accumulating all this power and wealth because God's grace and favor was on him, because God wanted something done. Do you guys know what God wanted done at the time? He wanted the temple built.
Temple, yeah.
Right. And then Solomon, who got it handed to him basically, doesn't indicate that he was after God's heart. He went astray with foreign women. He indulged himself in every manner. And Ecclesiastes says he was miserable for it all. You know, he took longer to build his house than he did to build the temple, and all these different indications that he wasn't in tune with whatever, but it was entrusted to him to do because David had blood on his hands.
Isn't it good enough just to have a bunch of wisdom, Terry?
Yeah, sure. Wisdom is good. I don't know what you mean by that, Mark Sanford. But
well, Solomon.
Of course, wisdom is good. But apparently wisdom came at a cost for him, which was misery.
Right.
Okay.
Well, he didn't live it, so there you go.
So there you have three examples of people with a lot of money. But I think the true indicator is where their heart was, is were they in tune with God and what God was doing at that time. And what I would love for people to catch right now in America is there is something God is doing in America right now. In the footnote of history that we're in, there's this big picture thing. There is a oppressed inner city, generally African-American and poor, that all of a sudden is erupting because they've been oppressed for so long. They're finding some ground to be gained in their fight against oppression and lopsidedness and opportunity. And there is definitely white privilege, especially in the suburbs and in rural areas. And people don't want to admit that because they live there and they're under it. But there is a lot of it. And I think what God's doing in this day is he's compelling those who call on his name that have been born into privilege to give that up and to do what he's doing. Put your resources into undoing this injustice that's been done for decades. It's been decades. And if you don't think it has, it's because you've not researched it, because it's plain as day. It's not like it's even hidden.
Well, yeah.
You know, government policy, housing, urban development.
There's stories coming out all the time of like, oh yeah, these municipalities had all this corruption and all this stuff. And I mean, it becomes a little too much for me. I just have to turn it off sometimes.
See,
I can't take
me.
Anymore.
How about the one we watched in Alton where they just the cop was macing the kids that were handcuffed that were sitting on a bench. Looks like 5 or 6 feet away from him, and they were sitting there. They weren't charging him or anything, and he's just shooting mace at him.
Yeah.
And it's like that happened in March. And because the video leaked, now all of a sudden they're doing an investigation. And me and Mark were sitting and watching this going, this is ridiculous. They should have immediately – there's no excuse for what we saw. There's absolutely no justification. It's to me, it looked like torture and or vindication and shouldn't be.
Pepper spray is no joke.
So
he should have been fired immediately, and instead they put him on administrative leave.
Paid administrative leave.
So the thing, like – the way I look at this is like – you know, it's like I understand, like, whatever you talk about privilege or racism or whatever it is, and everybody gets all up in arms and angry and it starts drawing lines really, really fast. But it's like, really, who else do you want to be leading the charge in this? You want the world to be leading the charge?
No, I want the church to do it.
Right.
I want the followers of Christ to do it.
Systems of rights and revenge and all this stuff to be leading that? Or do you want, like, humble, broken, sold out to Jesus people saying, yes, I'm going to give up whatever it is I have and serve to undo injustice, to live a life of sacrifice so that I can live so that there aren't even yokes anymore?
That's it, trying to tear down the yokes. Look, I lived out there in the suburbs. I lived that life for years and pursued those things. And the equivalent of tearing down the barns is moving to the bigger house, of getting the bigger 401k, of getting the newer car, the better car.
Safer neighborhood.
The whatever, making sure you're in a safer neighborhood, all of those things. And then your kids grow up in that area. And I think the biggest lie that the devil has put over privileged white America is that the African Americans that are in the inner city deserve what they have.
Oh, yeah.
And it's truly a lie. They don't deserve – I guarantee you that most of the people I know, if they'd grown up in the conditions that I see in the inner city where I live now, they would be no better off. Because they would have their hands tied. They wouldn't have – they would finally see their privilege, which is what happened to me. When I finally gave it all up and moved there, I'm like, holy cow, I had privilege all this time and I didn't even realize it. And there's just so much of that. And I think that you can either be the man who builds bigger barns and get your bigger house and your bigger 401k and your better vacation next year, or you could say, you know what? All of that stuff is dumb and it's not going to be eternal. And I want to take my wealth and I want to trust that God's going to care for me in my old age. And I'm going to take this wealth and myself and I'm going to go, like Isaiah 58, and we're going to go break some yokes and we're going to move our resources to get rid of this disparity. Okay, I'm in a disinvested neighborhood, and I'm going to tell you, most people living 10 miles outside of downtown St. Louis don't know what a disinvested neighborhood is because they don't live in one. Mm. And a disinvested neighborhood is where resource has been removed and it's not treated the same as everywhere else. Yeah. So what happens is decay compounds, and when decay compounds, then vacancies compound, then businesses leave and tax bases crumble, and they move all into the suburbs where it's safer, chasing that safety instead of chasing what God's doing. And in all of that comes an environment where if you don't have means, you're stuck there. Mm-hmm. And if you're stuck there and there's all of that going on, then crime increases, and that is your environment. You can't do anything about it. You didn't do anything to deserve it. Right. It happened around you. Yep. And but the great part of the gospel is that Jesus already set the path for us to say, I had everything and I gave it all up to come down here for you. Right. So what are you storing up for yourself for? Why don't you get the picture that there's plenty to go around, and it's perfectly fine to go and invest in a bunch of people that have been oppressed, whether you think they deserve it or not.
Right.
Because we didn't deserve it when he came and invested in us.
Right. If we're going to talk about what we deserve, everybody that is going to burn
out. Well, that's my point is that I've watched this attitude in, I'll just call my past life, my right-wing, Republican, suburban, middle to upper middle class Christian upbringing in my adult life that said, you know, well, they got to work for it. They got to do this for it. And it's like such a
Those people just need to pull themselves up by their bootstraps.
They don't even have boots.
I know. That's
my favorite saying. But the problem is that when Jesus came to them, they didn't get Jesus that way. They didn't earn it. They didn't get their behavior right to get him. They didn't pull themselves up by their bootstraps to a level where he was ready to reach them.
Good luck pulling those bootstraps up to heaven.
Yeah. What they did was – and the only way you get him, by the way, is to recognize how worthless of a wretch you are and fall on your face and beg for mercy. If you didn't do that, you didn't get him. I'm sorry. You're under another gospel. And you're probably
version
going to have – you're probably going to have a little bit of a goat smell on you at the end if you're doing it that way. I don't know how else to put it.
Goat stank.
A little goat stank stuck to you.
Oh, my goodness.
You definitely want to get on the sheep side of things.
We got to make a T-shirt. Goat stank.
I don't think we do.
Okay.
So if you get what I'm telling you is the meager lifestyle thing we're talking about is that attitude of utilizing our resources to do what it is God's doing today. And I mean, if you're hearing my voice and you're not catching the picture that this is orchestrated by God – is God the one that said, you know, burn things down and shoot at cops? No, that's basically a manifestation of frustration and oppression. But what God is saying is, I'm going to fix this.
Yeah.
And I'm fixing it in this generation. I'm 100% guaranteed, I'm assured, God is coming to the inner cities of America, and he is going to break forth in revival and reformation, and he is going to fix the oppression and the injustice. And I got news for you. He is going to empower a generation of people of color, and they are going to rule this country. That's what's going to happen. So if you think that your white Anglo-Saxon Protestant ways of life from the last 60 or 100 years are going to continue, you are wrong. You are living in a hole. You are not watching the demographics. You're not seeing what I'm seeing, because I'm sitting with some really articulate, intelligent, powerful, young black people.
Passionate
about this. And listen, not passionate like I'm going to go burn Walgreens, passionate and intelligent like I know how to fix this, and I'm going to organize people, and we're going to vote, and we are going to act, and we are going to empower, and we are going to direct our time and our energy and our life into it. Man, when you see that coming, that's really exciting to me.
I think a couple things. Like, I think that a lifestyle of luxury, essentially, and comfort just kills passion. It's like there's so I had zero passion 6 years ago. I mean, I remember when I was in my fourth year of college, or whatever. My one counselor was like, "So, Jason, what are you passionate about?" And I'm like,
"What?" You know,
watching movies.
Watching movies, right?
Listen, if you're passionate about what we're talking about, call us. Last week I was at a conference at the O'Fallon Recplex that Grace Hill put on.
Yeah, that was 3 days ago.
Grace Hill, was it really?
It was Tuesday.
Man, my life, I'm telling you, it's a blur. Grace Hill, Washington University. I don't want to leave people out that were involved.
There were so many. There were a lot.
But there was like 140 North St. Louis service providers that showed up for this conference. And when I look at what was – I can't remember the girl's name. That's the Ferguson Commission. Mm. But I wish I would have wrote it down. I didn't, because she was one of the most intelligent, articulate, passionate people that I have seen speak in a very long time. And this girl is going to change things. Mm-hmm. It's going to happen. I don't know if she's going to do it in the Ferguson Commission. But in her life, she's going to make some very significant change. Met some great people. Marlon Lee with the Urban League, and some partnerships are starting to form. But 140 service providers got together. I don't care what color their skin is, because it was all kinds of different people
there.
Goodness. And they basically said, we're passionate about what's going on here. We are passionate about what's happened in North St. Louis over the last whatever 100 years, however you want to tag it. And we're really passionate about, now that there's opportunity to change it, about getting in and helping change it. And it's not going away. You guys, the news may settle down and you may not see the protests in the streets. And I think that's a maybe a good thing, because then the manifestation of the frustration that's not my preferred way isn't the front and center of what's going on. But let me just tell you something. It ain't going away.
Yeah.
The passion is building. The people are organizing. And this disinvestment, the storing up in the barns in places that don't need it, it's going to come to an end.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, it's obvious. I mean, like I said, like sometimes I just have to turn it off because I'm like, really, I can't deal with this right now. It's like, it's obvious there's something wrong. It's obvious that it's been wrong for kind of a long time. Like, we had the civil rights movement and all this stuff, and a bunch of people got killed, and there's a bunch of stuff all over the news, right? And it was really terrible, but good and everything. And
a lot of laws changed.
Still happening. Yeah. Laws changed and everything. But there's still something very wrong.
The oppression didn't stop.
Yeah. And you know what doesn't fix it? What doesn't fix it is still sitting on your butt and storing up your stuff and having just,
you know, the stuff that's coming out in the news as a result of it. I mean, look, we deal with the courts and all of these traffic tickets. We knew it was a problem way before it came out after Michael Brown. And we deal with that on a regular basis. People that come in to ask us for help most often are weighed down with minor traffic offenses. And an $85 ticket turns into a $700 fine. Mm-hmm. And it's ridiculous. These little communities are funding themselves on the backs of poor people. And who knows whether it was legitimate or not. I mean, they profile them, pull them over, write them tickets. You know, there was a cop once that was saying, I could pull anybody over and write at least 3 tickets if I really want to. Yeah. And it's like, really? I mean, is that your job?
And if they're mailing tickets for the cameras and stuff, it's like, really? Those addresses don't really mean a whole lot.
No, that's right. Not in where we live, because where people stay. They stay somewhere. They don't live somewhere because they're moving around so much. It's a very transient, even in the population that has homes. There are a lot of people that bounce from one home to another and stay here for a couple months, stay there, get closer to a job or whatever. We're going to do our commercial break so that we can be on time.
Hi, this is Ben Pasley with Enter the Worship Circle. I've got a question for you. Are you looking for a meaningful local service opportunity for your high school or even an older group? Well, Sun Ministries has a lot of work to do. They're rebuilding the Hyde Park neighborhood in North St. Louis, and they could really use your help. They're rehabbing properties, they're cleaning up parks, they're engaging the community in many different ways. So, if you or your group are looking for a local, short-term, or even an ongoing service project in the St. Louis area, I recommend that you contact Sun Ministries. Just call or email them anytime.
That's Terry at sunministries.org or 636-544-2151.
Yes, sir?
Wilson, that party in a pan lunch you got from Sun Cafe was fantastic, so I have another job for you.
Oh, thanks, sir. Yes, sir.
Well, I'm holding a seminar for 100 people, and I need a meal that I can hand out that can be eaten at their seats. Pan Man won't work for this one, Wilson, so get on it.
Yes, sir.
Oh, and remember, Wilson, no chicken or pizza, and I want something to offer besides just sandwiches, or you're fired.
Oh, jeez, what am I going to do now? Party in a Pan Man saved me last time, but this... What's that noise?
I'm Party in a Pan Man.
Yeah, I know.
I'm here once again to save the day and your job.
Wait a minute. The boss said no pan this time, dude. How could you possibly help?
It's Party in a Pan Man. Oh. Anyway, I'm going to introduce you to my sidekick, Box Lunch Boy.
He looks just like you.
It's the beard. Tell him how we can help, Box Lunch Boy.
By offering you a great assortment of boxed lunches from Sun Cafe. You can choose from salads, sandwiches, and wraps, packaged to go and priced right. We can even arrange delivery in a limited area.
Psh, I didn't even know this was possible. That's perfect.
Just plan ahead and order 24 hours in advance so your order will be fresh and ready. The menu is available on our website, www.suncafeandmarket.org. That's S-U-N, Cafe and Market.
You two are quite the duo.
Some might even say we're dynamic.
Wake up, Mark.
Whoa, welcome back. Hey, I know, I'm still laughing off that last commercial. We just recorded that one.
That Box Lunch Boy geek kills me.
Yeah. Hi.
Hey, that's Box Lunch Boy. Hey, we have Box Lunch Boy in studio.
Oh, boy.
Goodness.
He's a real boy.
Wow. All right, so back to real important things.
We amuse ourselves, don't
yes,
we?
Yes, we do. Uh-huh. Very well, too. And I'm thoroughly amused right now.
That's a good thing.
If you can't laugh at yourself, not, other people will do it for you.
That's true. That's wisdom from the Party in a Pan Man.
Valid point.
Okay.
It's the beard.
Listen.
Yes.
All right. Everybody was listening, but Mark, he was talking.
What?
That Mark. We're still talking about sacrificial attitude towards money, living a moderate lifestyle, directing your funds, your resources, your wealth into what God is doing in this day, in this age, in our country.
And why would you want to do that, though?
Because that way you get to store up treasure in heaven and be a part of expanding the kingdom, because that's what God is doing.
Oh.
In every age, God is doing something.
Oh, and if you can't,
most people have reduced that down to building their church congregation. And that is not what God is doing in this day and age. God is doing fantastic stuff, big stuff that you cannot control, but you can be a part of. That's what he's doing. And I'm telling you, in this day and age, he is targeting the inner cities of America to break the yoke of oppression.
You know why I think that is?
Why?
Because there's starkness.
Oh, my goodness, yes.
You can't go to many inner cities and be like, yep, everything's just fine here.
No, you can't.
Yeah, I know.
Oh, this looks just like where I'm from.
And growing up, you know, 20 miles out of the city, it's a completely different atmosphere.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so I think you...
What we were talking about on the break is Mark Sanford just realized that he grew up in white privilege, didn't know that, until just maybe just dawned on him.
Well, no, God, it's like it, more specifically is segregation.
Yeah.
I mean, because, I mean, there were, you know, there's black people in St. Charles County, but I didn't have many black friends at all.
See, I had a different experience, though, because I grew up in Cahokia, and I was a minority in many of my classes.
Oh, right. Mm-hmm. You were.
I was.
I grew up in Caseyville, and at that time, I was... It was definitely a white bedroom community. That's what it was. And I will never forget that, you know, my grandparents grew up in East St. Louis. And most of my family, both sides, came from there. And so there was a lot of racism in my family. And I really, growing up as a kid, I didn't understand that that's what it was. But I do remember that we used to go to French Village Drive-In. I'm just going to tell you the story real quick, and then we'll go back to the topic. We went to French Village Drive-In. I bet I was like 6 years old. I could actually identify when it was because there was a James Bond movie that was coming out that we went to see. And Goldfinger, I think, original, whenever it was, would have been like in the 70s. So I may have been 9 years old. But I went to the – you know, they had a big playground up in the front. And, you know, you parked in rows and you had the speakers and everything. It was a real drive-in. But on the breaks, you go up and play on the playground or waiting for the show. And I remember there was a black kid up there that I got to playing with. And we started to have fun. We were talking and everything. And I was like, well, you ought to come over to my house and play. And he's like, yeah. Then you can come over to my house and play. And it was like, okay, well, let's go ask our parents. And then we'll come back, you know, on the break and we'll talk about it. And in both situations, when the parents found out the race of the other kid, they both said we could not. And when we came back together – and I said, my mom said I couldn't. And he said, well, my mom said I couldn't either. And we sort of were like, why? And I said, well, because she said, because you're black. And he's like, well, they said, because you're white. It was like devastating for us.
See, and I can relate to that, like on an emotional level.
like, not that specific thing, but I look at my daughter, who is just crazy, berserker, nuts, really intense emotionally. She's only two. But she loves her cousins, like, with a passion that is a little scary.
Right. And well, she loves,
like,
everybody that
I understand way. You guys weren't 2 years old, but it's still, like, you're a kid. Like, you have a lot of emotional weight. Like, oh, a friend, and there's fun. Let's hang out.
And who cares what color their skin is?
I can't. You know, it's like, I can't be your friend now.
Right. But you don't do that. I know that. And I see how Josie is. She don't care what color people are.
Yeah,
no. She's all over them.
There's an interesting thing, like, with my upbringing, like, you know, being mainly in a white community, it actually, like, starved me of diversity. And then, you know, so, but instead of it taking a really, really bad turn where, you know, it was just following the footsteps of racism, it turned into, like, a hunger for, like, appreciating other diversity.
You know,
that's really what I like to see.
It goes both ways, all right? The same thing that you were starved of is people that grow up in 100% African-American communities are starved of also.
Right.
You know, we had four kids come into the cafe the other night, and they were causing all kinds of havoc. And I was in there, and they didn't know who I was. You know, they were being loud. They were having fun, all right? But they were being inappropriate, but there was hardly anybody else in there. So I was never seen them before in the neighborhood, so I was letting them have their fun. And then right as they were getting ready to leave, they said some really degrading and derogatory things to one of the waitresses, and that's it for me. I'm done. They're teenage boys. They got to know. You can't disrespect women in front of me. I'm not going to put up with that. And as they left, they flipped me off through the window, which is another bad thing to do for me because, you know, I immediately went out the other door and cut them off on the sidewalk and said, hey, are, you know, problem with me? And we had a discussion immediately because of the fact that I told them I'm not going to tolerate you degrading women, and I'm not going to let you flip me off without me coming out to ask you what your problem is. They immediately labeled me as a racist. I mean, it was like, oh, I bet if we were white, you wouldn't have done that. And I said, well, that's the dumbest thing I've ever heard. This has nothing to do with your skin color. But for them, everything that they'd ever known about white people was thrust upon me, mm-hmm. and I experienced racism.
Right.
And what I realize is that that is the result of them experiencing racism their entire life.
Yeah.
Right.
So I paid for the sins of my ancestors, relatives, and everybody else that's ever oppressed black people in that moment. And it opens my eyes. And I hope that every white person listening here has the ability or the opportunity to experience that so that they can start to have some sympathy and compassion on what's been created in this country.
Right.
So that they can become a part of fixing it.
The thing behind privilege is like, okay – and it wasn't something that I was like, oh, I'm really glad we get to talk about privilege and racism and stuff. And it's like,
I'm not
no, because I understand how angry people get about it. But it's like, you can't say it doesn't exist because unless you and your parents and your grandparents and your great-grandparents and beyond that were systemically abused, oppressed, neglected, whatever it was.
And I'm Irish, so I have some of that in my history. You know, it's so like, far back that, I mean, I can't
claim it. And it's like, then yeah, you have some amount of privilege.
Right. Well, and you're either fighting it or you're passively engaged in it. You know what I'm saying?
So I think, yeah.
Or wholeheartedly.
On that note, I think the important thing to note and the important thing for everybody listening is if you're not a part of the solution, you're a part of the problem.
Right.
Right. So what I did with that moment when it dawned on me in that conversation was I said, okay, what do I have that I can use to break this down? And I said, you know what? I'm glad you guys came in and you had fun. I didn't even mind that you were loud, rowdy, that you were vulgar. There wasn't a lot of people in there. That's not what we're here talking about. You got to treat the waitresses with respect, and you're welcome here anytime. And then I asked them if they had summer jobs and if they wanted to have work for this summer. And one of the kids already had a job, and the other three blew me off. They didn't even take me seriously. But it was like that's what I had, so that's all I could offer mm-hmm. at the time. So, Jason, you got a song you want to do?
Sure.
Right?
Let's do a song.
I think we need to. And then we're going to come back and actually talk about our topic.
That's right. Maybe. Yeah, our topic. So this song is by Beautiful Eulogy, which we heard from them last week. And I wanted to play this song because it was a tie between this song and the one I played last week. This one's called Covet. And it's just basically about these characters that they're portraying that have an utter discontent with their life and longing for these other things, and then they contrast that at the end with Christ's ridiculous grace, shattering all of that stuff to pieces. So here it is.
Thank you. place to obtain a better life for mine and a spot to provide for my wife and I. I never been afraid to use my hands or get them dirty. In fact, I work just as hard as any other man. If I could get just one wish, my hope would be to get one chance to strike it rich and switch my circumstance and advance myself to count myself as one of them. You know them, the ones who never have to pretend to be, who have money for everything, who never have any enemies, who write checks then check out, never have to worry about anything. I wanna live like that, cause what they got's a lot more appealing than what I got. They got no care for me, so I should just take a little bit of what they got. Why not? Why not? Nothing to look forward to. Unclear where to steer, where to go, but how to get far from here. Far away from the shed where I lay my head and often shed my tears. Deep down I long for a place to belong, safe and calm. It seems I always went the wrong way, now all my dreams are gone. No destination left for me, no destiny to manifest. Trying to catch butterflies, but I got a hole in my net. I want to escape and run away, cause every day I'm forced to fake it. If the opportunity showed its ugly face, then I would take it. And no one would expect it, guess I never had a heart to tell them I wanted a fresh start. Cause I've been barely getting by for a long time. It's easier to leave and never have to see him bleed. I might sound like a coward, but inside I feel powerless. They say the eyes are the windows, your soul is sold, and my windows are broken glass to the pieces. That's why I hide and keep my secrets at.
Welcome back to the Resistance Radio Show on the Reformation Radio Network.
Easy for you to say. Some people have a way with words.
You stole my coffee cup, so I need more coffee.
Here, so something I didn't notice beforehand about that song is that basically was talking a lot about what we were just talking about. It's these people that are – but that second character that he brought up was someone that's just struggling so much with life that he can't even barely like face his dependence.
So here – one of the things I want to make clear to everybody that's been listening to this discussion is – it is within your ability to decide to change course. It is. You do not have to live in the system and the trap that you've been in. You do not have to live to accumulate wealth. You do not have to live to store up for yourself. At any time in your life, you can choose to do what Jesus did, which is give up your privilege and direct your wealth to what God's doing now.
Yes.
You can do that at any time. And I think that you probably should prayerfully consider whether or not that's what you should do before you get to the end and find out who the sheep and who the goats really are. Mm-hmm. Because there's a group of people at the end who thought they were doing everything they should do, and they end up fired. That's it. Yep. Fired. Wow. Okay. So what are we supposed to do with money and with our work and everything that we do? Acts 20, 33 through 35 says, I have coveted no one else's silver, no one's silver or gold or clothes. You yourself know that these hands ministered to my own needs and to the men who were with me. In everything, I showed you that by working hard in this manner, you might help the weak and remember the words of the Lord Jesus that he himself said, it is more blessed to give than to receive. I hear that quoted at Christmas all the time, and that is not what's being talked about.
What?
What's being talked about is providing for basic needs so that you can minister.
Mm-hmm.
Not that I give Christmas gifts instead of getting them. Or, yeah, whatever. Okay, Ephesians 4:28. He who steals must steal no longer, but rather he must labor, performing with his own hands what is good. Why? So that he will have something to share with the one who has need. Now, how many of you out there have that attitude towards your work? I'm going to go to work tomorrow so that by the end of the day, I will have something to give away. What? You got a leak over there? You're all staring at me. Well, listen, that's the idea of Scripture. I just read it to you.
That's Jesus' attitude towards money.
But just, okay, so like the whole, and I'm just going to say it because just for my own, just because I want to, but the whole American dream, it's just a lie. It's a lie and it's a trap and it will eat you up and it will just cause you to do really stupid stuff. And you look at Jesus, who was like, here is life. I came to bring you abundant life, right? Abundant life, not like a meager little, here's like some dried up leaves, that's your life. It's abundant life. And this is what he says. You know, those of you that are stealing, stop it and work. Do good things so that you can share with people that are in need, not so that you can pad your pocket.
So there's a starting place and a continuing thing that's required in order to do this. And in Luke 14:33, Jesus said, you couldn't be his disciple unless you sell all of your own possessions. And he also says you can only serve one master, the choice is God or money. So the starting place is becoming a disciple of Jesus and saying, I'm going to live for what the kingdom, not for my local church growth and not for my own personal thing. I'm going to live with whatever I can, work with my own hands to support me and whoever else, and we're going to do ministry, and we're going to direct all of what we have towards those who have need. That's the starting place. If you haven't reached that starting place, then you got to question whether you really understand the gospel of what Jesus actually did when he came to you, worthless sinner, Romans 5:8, and said, I'm going to die for you.
Mm-hmm.
Are you doing that for anybody else? Are you willing to do that for anybody else? Has the love of Christ really set into your heart to where you're like, yeah, everything that I have that's my own, I count as loss? Like Paul said.
So, yeah. So on that note, you look at where it says that there's no greater love than you lay down your life for your friend. It's like a lot of people are like, oh, I'll die for someone. Yeah, that's cool. But will you intentionally lay down the life you've built up and the life that you plan on building up so that you can help somebody else? Because right. that's how you really love someone. Otherwise, you just love you.
To say you're going to die for someone's easy because once you're dead, you're not even going to worry
that's
about it.
That's not hard.
But to say you're going to live meagerly so that you can undo the yokes that have been placed on people mm-hmm. that you don't even know and maybe you don't even like them. I don't know. That's hard. And that's the continuing motivation is love. 1 Corinthians 13:3, if I give all my possessions to feed the poor and I surrender my body to be burned, but I do not have love, it profits nothing.
Mm-hmm.
It has to be love. There has to be a love motivation. And then Jason, you were going to read 1 John 3:16.
Yeah, because it basically repeats that same idea. And so this is at 1 John 3:16 through 18. We know love by this, that he laid down his life for us, and we ought to lay down our lives for the brethren. But whoever has the world's goods and sees his brother in need and closes his heart against him, how does the love of God abide in him? Little children, let us not love with word or with tongue, but in deed and truth.
Cool. So what I want to do now is you have one more song, which is like one of my favorite songs. Uh-huh. Listen to it all the time, up really loud early in the morning, probably wake my wife up. I know it wakes the dog up. But I want to do commercial break, and then I want to go right into the song, and then I want to do that now. Is that all right?
Yep.
Then that's what we're going to do. Welcome back.
Here we are.
To the Resistance Radio Show on the Reformation Radio Network. Caught Mark sleeping.
Sorry, no, actually, I was reading in my Bible.
I love that.
Just throwing off.
I love that song, and I love the fact that that was the shortened version. If you guys want the full version, it's about another minute and a half of that thing.
Yeah, it's almost 7 minutes.
Yeah, it's really awesome.
We thought that was a bit much for an AM talk show.
Well, and also because we only have so much time.
That's
and
right.
We do want to talk about other things. So here's what we're going to talk about in the last segment is defeating greed. How God views it and how we're supposed to get over it. All right, Hebrews 13:5. Make sure that your character is free from the love of money. Being content with what you have. Wait, being content with what you have? Really? For he himself has said, I will never desert you, nor will I ever forsake you. Do you realize how many times that I've heard that passage right there quoted as the assurance of salvation?
That's
that he will never leave you nor forsake you. That's where that always ends up quoted. But that's not what he's saying, is he? He's saying, be content with what you have. He's not leaving you.
Right. I was going to say, he's saying, I'm your possession.
Hey, what else do you get online with need?
Get online with that. Mark Sanford?
Yes.
Read.
Oh, thanks, Terry. Stop whipping me. All right, so this is 1 Timothy 6, 6 through 11.
Do not read it in the voice of Wilson. That would be bad.
But godliness actually is a means of great gain when accompanied by contentment, for we have brought nothing into the world, so we cannot take anything out of it
either. How much do we get to take out?
Zero.
Thank you.
Watch this.
Read. If we have food and covering, with these we shall be content. With those who want to get rich, but those who want to get rich fall into temptation and a snare and many foolish and harmful desires, which plunge men into ruin and destruction. For the love of money is a root of all sorts of evil, and some, by longing for it, have wandered away from the faith and pierced themselves with many griefs. But flee from these things, you man of God, and pursue righteousness, godliness, faith, love, perseverance, and gentleness.
So we're not supposed to just avoid them. We're supposed to flee from those things.
Right. All those things that it tells you to pursue.
Run the other way.
You can't put in a bank account.
So can we just – I just wanted to mention how that verse just flat out preaches against the prosperity gospel and religion for gain.
Sure does.
All right. There we go.
Yeah,
also, further on in 6, 17 through 19, so just a couple verses later, he says, "Instruct those who are rich in this present world not to be conceited or to fix their hope on the uncertainty of riches, but on God, who richly supplies us with all things to enjoy. Instruct them to do good, to be rich in good works, to be generous and ready to share, storing up for themselves the treasure of a good foundation for the future so that they may take hold of that which is life indeed."
Yeah, I really wish that I would see this thing take hold in America today where people get off the stinking tithe and they get their money in their pocket ready to help somebody in need. And that's what they live for is, man, today I'm going to go to work so I can earn money so that I will have something that I can help someone with. And I'm going to personally meet that need. That would be a great thing. Listen, you talked about the prosperity gospel that's out there, and it's predominant. And it's more predominant in poor areas than it is even in wealthy areas. And 2 Timothy 1, 3 through 5, man, I mean, this hits it. It says, "But realize this, that in the last days difficult times will come. For men will be lovers of self, lovers of money, boastful, arrogant, revilers, disobedient to parents, ungrateful, unholy, unloving, irreconcilable, malicious gossips, without self-control, brutal, haters of good, treacherous, reckless, conceited, lovers of pleasure rather than lovers of God, holding to a form of godliness, although they have denied its power. Avoid such men as these." Avoid them. How do we do that in a church whenever we have people that are there that's what they're pursuing? If that gospel is being preached, then they are pursuing some of these things. They are pursuing money. They are lovers of self. They are looking for pleasure. That's what they're spending their money on.
Yeah,
bigger, fancier cars, better clothing, all that stuff has nothing to do with God's kingdom.
No, any gospel that's going to encourage you to pursue those things and call them a blessing, any gospel that's telling you, any preacher that's telling you that you have to give to him in order for you to receive God's blessing, or that you need to give so you can get – it's like, really? And the only reason that you have nothing to give is because you haven't given – like, that doesn't make any sense. It's like, so if you're poor, it's because you've not given anything.
And
– maybe you didn't have anything.
I will start to give respect to that gospel when I start to see the preachers preaching it, living it, and giving all their stuff away.
Right.
But if they're telling you that you give and God will give back to you, and look at me, I'm an example because I have all this stuff, that's not an example.
Right.
Because the example would be that you gave all your stuff away and you got more stuff. Not that you told other people, give it to me and now I have more stuff. That's not what they're preaching.
Right.
Otherwise, they would be giving their money to you.
And even if God did that, because there are some things where it implies that he does things similar to that. He says, you know,
reaping and sowing and all that.
But it's like the focus is always on the money and you having the money and you receiving the money.
Right.
It's not on God. It's not on joining God in his works. It's not on blessing others.
And always the works is that church or what's going on in that building or in that ministry, not what God's doing in the world today, which is a much bigger thing. And it's always going to take priority over the local. How do you have elders in a church that is desirous of and preaching for the accumulation of money? Because 1 Timothy 3:3 says elders must be free from the love of money. So if you're in a doctrine that loves money, that preaches for money, that looks at money as the blessing and sign of God's approval, then how in the world do you have an elder? They're disqualified.
Right.
In Acts 8, Peter curses Simon for thinking he can buy the gift of God. That's pretty condemning. 1 Timothy 6:18, it says, instruct them to do good, to be rich in good works, to be generous and ready to share. That's the instruction I want to see taking hold in America, yeah. Is I want people to be instructed to do good and to be rich in good works, because God said he's setting apart a people, a peculiar people for himself that's zealous for good works. Mm-hmm. And I want to see people become more zealous to do good things for people. That's what I'm looking for. Oh. So once we have our attitude towards money correct, we can begin to use it as a resource to free people from Satan's traps. I don't think that a lack of resources – I don't think there is a lack of resources to fill all the needs in the world today. We talked about a lot about that last week and how little money it takes. You know, 8 hours of sleep, the government spends enough that we could feed every hungry school children in the world. What's the problem is people storing up for themselves.
Right.
That's really the problem. So the resources are being hoarded by those who are commanded to give them up. So once a Christian adopts a sacrificial attitude towards money and devotes themselves to living a moderate lifestyle, they will then they can become stewards of God's stuff, because once money's in its proper place, we're free to focus on being a part of building God's kingdom and not our own. You guys got 30 seconds for last words.
I just wanted to point out Matthew 19:16-24. Not going to read it, but it's the rich man that comes to Jesus and says, what am I supposed to do? And he gives him this stuff, and then he's like, well, I've done all that. And he's like, okay, well, give up all that you have. And he goes away sad because he's holding on to those things. He's valuing them, his possessions.
He has a lot of stuff. He's sad because he has so much, and it's like, I don't want to give it all up.
But it's not just that he has it. It's that he's valuing it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I mean, it doesn't matter how much you have if you're not valuing it. But he's valuing it more than Christ. He has Christ, the Son of God, in front of him, and he's like, you're not good enough.
Wow.
Don't be like him.
So next week, we're going to finish up on core values, then we're going to start plugging some guests into this thing. And till then,
bye.
Have a wonderful week.
See ya.
See ya.
Resistance is hosted by Dr. Terry Goodwin, Mark Sanford, Jason Callahan, and Mark Goodwin. Our theme music is The Resistance by Josh Garrels and is licensed by Marmoset Music. This episode of The Resistance Radio Show was originally broadcast live on KXEN 1010 AM in St. Louis, Missouri.
Thank you for being a part of The Resistance. Be sure to subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, or directly from our feed at theresistanceradioshow.wordpress.com. Find us on Twitter at Disciple Driven, or on Facebook at facebook.com/Disciple Driven Church, or on our website at DiscipleDrivenChurch.org. To learn more about our missionary work in the inner cities of America, please visit sunministries.org. You can email us directly at terry@DiscipleDrivenChurch.org.